Well, good afternoon, Gary.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Today is November 4th, 2021, and we're here at the offices of InTown Collaborative Ministries on Ponce in Atlanta. My name is Daniel Enger, and I have the pleasure of being here today with you, Gary. I really appreciate you taking time to talk, and I'm looking forward to hearing your story and to learning from you. My first question for you, Gary, is a really big one, namely, please tell the story of your life from the time you were a little boy up to the present day.
Well, I was 2 years old. My father was killed in front of me, got shot. And then my mom, and I grew up, and we moved away to Atlanta, and my mom married the man that killed my father, so that was kind of strange. And then my mom committed suicide when I was 22. And then me being an athlete, jock in high school, I was introduced to drugs and alcohol at younger years, and I started drinking when I was probably around 12 or 13. And then the alcohol and the drugs and all the other stuff that I was messing with and through the years was just and when my mom committed suicide, my whole life just turned to chaos because I didn't care anymore. And I was a mama's boy, by the way, and my whole life just kind of just went from one to another. And then I got married at I was 29, and I tried to do the right thing, but the drugs and alcohol, the alcohol especially, was my main poison for me, because it just went to one thing to another. And I ended up losing my marriage, and I got a beautiful son from the marriage, but my whole life was just in and out of prison and jail because of the bad choices that I made. And instead of trying to get my life in order, as soon as I'd get out doing my little 2 years or 16 months or a year in and out of jail and prison, I'd go straight back to drinking, and then that would lead to doing drugs. And it was just like a repetitive cycle for me. I couldn't get my life in order. I just kept falling back and back and back. And then now I'm just, for the first time, I'm sober on my own through God, and that's my sponsor. And I turned my life over to the Lord, and my whole life has gotten a lot better. I am getting things slowly but surely. Things are coming around. It hasn't been easy staying focused in the recovery. I'm going on 10 months, and it's been difficult. And my life is. I finally found my family in Texas. I haven't through Facebook, and I'm going to see them for Christmas for the first time in like 24 years. So it's amazing, you know, the good things that's going on now. Because of me being clean and sober, and that's what I do. That's my job, staying sober. That's about it.
Gary, of all the things you've accomplished or overcome in your life so far, what are you most proud of?
I think the thing I was most proud of is when I got married and had that boy. That was the most proudest time in my life. I was actually doing the right thing. And then right now, me being sober is the most important. My life is very serious now. I take my freedom and my life and my health very serious now because of the things that I've been through.
Gary, you've gained a lot of hard-fought wisdom from experiences in your life so far. If you were invited to share your wisdom with school kids in your community, giving them guidance to live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives, what would you tell them?
I would tell them just to try to get something that you're good at, whether playing the guitar, you know, or playing soccer, football, and then take that. And because sports is good for a lot of, well, for me, I was an athlete. and take the studying the schoolwork very serious, because that was my problem, not passing my test, and just try to focus on trying to do what's right, and especially keep your grades up, and get something that you're good at and stay with it.
Gary, in what ways would you say your life is going well these days? Please talk a little bit about how life is good for you at the present time.
It is great for me right now because of the sobriety. It's the most greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. I was forced into programs because I, violate my probation or parole, fail a drug test or a piss test, whatever they call it, and then I'd get sent back to jail or prison. And I did this with the Lord. For me, everybody's got their own beliefs or whatever, but I turned my life over to the Lord and asked Him to take those cravings and desires away. And the downside to me being sober, it seems like the devil comes at me more now, which is I deal with a lot of adversities. And I've been in this program for a year, and I've seen a lot of people that are still on drugs and not doing the right thing, and they're getting their apartments left and right. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with me? And I'm doing the right thing. It's like, but you can't worry about what another person's getting. So I realized that I just got, when my time comes, it'll come. But, and it seems like a lot of people be saying stuff out. I deal with, I'm staying in a rooming house, and a lot of them get high, and then you got a bully that stays upstairs and he terrorizes people. So I just stay focused in my recovery and in the Lord. I stay in my room, and I don't allow anybody to get me out of my box, because my destination is getting that apartment. So, but my life is totally different for me now, and I hang around positive people. I don't hang around people that talk negative or, if they're on drugs, I have nothing. I don't say nothing bad about them, but I don't hang around people that are doing negative stuff. So if you're not on a positive level, I don't have really much talk for you.
Gary, you've already answered this next question in part, but I'd like to know if you have more to say about it. You talked just now about ways in which your life is going well. Tell me, please, what led to those things going well for you? How did that happen?
Well, it was like a blessing in disguise. They came up under the bridge I had tents. It was also a place where I used to go drink and get high every day. And these people came up, different bands from different agencies, and they said they'd put us up in a hotel for like 90 days and then try to get us to. I heard about it. Well, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. They gave me a little tag on my arm, and they came and picked us up the next day. And on Super Bowl Sunday, which was January the 7th, I broke my leg. And I was on the way to get some more beer. I'd been drinking. And I'm an alcoholic. I was recovering alcoholic. And we was on the way to get some beer, and I slipped on the sleeves, and I broke my fibula bone, and I fractured my ankle. And it was the most painful thing. I don't know if you broke your leg. It's not the crutches. And I had all these things and appointments I had. I was involved in trying to get my Social Security, birth certificate. And it put me to a standstill, and I came to an understanding. I can't move around no more. I can't hustle. I can't be just going. So I got on my hands and asked God to take those desires and cravings away. And when I broke that leg, it was like a blessing in disguise. It woke me up in a way, and I've been sober ever since that day.
Gary, looking ahead, when it comes to living a healthy, safe, stable, and happy life, what are your hopes and dreams looking ahead?
My goals right now is staying focused in my recovery, working on my relationship with the Lord. I still got a lot of character flaws. I got some stuff that I do sometimes that is just not right. I'm working on a lot of things and being a part of my son. I haven't seen my son since he was 4 years old. He's a professional golfer now. He's 25. And in order to me to be a part of his life, I had to get this recovery thing going. And I'm fixing to get my apartment. I'll be able to build a foundation to where he can actually come over and see me. Maybe we can go out and eat a steak or something, And That's the biggest thing. I don't know if he's going to have a lot of animosity toward me because I wasn't there as a father, and me being in prison most of his life, in and out. That's a big thing to me, just to work a relationship and build a foundation for me and him to where I can be a part of his life and help him in any way I can. That's my goal.
Gary, what are some of the personal strengths that you have that you can draw on as you pursue the hopes and dreams you just talked about?
Well, I'm a lot stronger now. I'm able to handle things, adversities, a little bit better, because I had an angry, bitter spirit for a long time because of the situations I've been in. So I think since I've been sober, I get really agitated easy now because I'm used to drinking my life away, which took all my problems. So when I'm dealing with these people with apartments, they're telling me these stories. My paperwork got missing, and I'm like, I was supposed to be in this apartment 7 weeks ago. And then I found out the guy that I was getting he got my apartment. So I'm seeing all these things, and I'm trying to evaluate it and figure out why me, why am I waiting out? All these people getting it. I'm still in this program almost a year, and I still ain't got my apartment. But I'm thankful because I do have a place to stay. And I've had to go through extra loopholes. I've had to, but the struggle is real. But I'm staying focused because my life is better for me now. And I realize life's not a bowl of cherries. Life's all about trials and tribulations. Some people die by them, some people overcome them. I'm just trying to overcome all the adversities that come my way, and I'm able to handle them better now than I was when I was drinking, because that's all I did. I drank my life away to take away my pain and suffering, and actually it was just totally destroying me. I'm lucky I didn't lose my liver. But God is good for me.
Gary, what challenges and obstacles do you see standing between you and the realization of the hopes and dreams that you mentioned? What holds you back?
Nothing's really holding me back. The main thing for me that is this apartment, and that's the main, because I'm writing a book about my life, and at the pad split, you got people running in and out, knocking on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning, asking me for, I do smoke cigarettes, and it's always a lot of adversity. You got a bully upstairs threatening folks. It's hard for me to concentrate and write a book when I got a lot of, and most of the people in there are getting high and they drink, which I'm cool with that. I can block my room out, but there's a lot of noise going on. A lot of adversities there, but I'm able to handle it living there. But as far as like really concentrating on writing this book that I'm looking forward to doing, it's hard for me to do. That's why I'm looking forward to getting this apartment so I can build a foundation and be a part of my son's life as well.
What needs to be done so that the challenges and obstacles you just mentioned can be overcome and you can realize your personal hopes and dreams?
Well, I need to stay focused in the Lord's word, because I felt when I was over at my girlfriend's, I stopped reading my Bible. I wasn't praying as much. And a lot of the adversities on the elements that was coming at me in the streets and at the bus stop, people saying stuff out the side of their mouth or whatever, whatever. Normally, me being also got the chain gang mentality, I just say, what'd you say? I'm ready to fight, but now I'm able to think things through before I react and handle things a lot better. And I know I've got a long way to go. It's a struggle, but I'm dealing with it the best I can.
Gary, I'd like to ask now for your perspectives on the homeless community with a series of questions. How would you describe the homeless community in Atlanta? Who are the people who make up the homeless community in Atlanta?
The homeless community, I'll tell you straight up about it. It's what it is. Most of the guys that are homeless out here is because they choose to be. Either they're on drugs or on crack, or there's something that's altering their minds. And a lot of these people have been through so much in their life from their past. They live in their past. They carry it around with them everywhere they go. And instead of trying to better themselves and put their past behind them, because I was one of those people. So what they do is they infest themselves with the drugs and the women and the tricking off with the women and doing the things they do. That was one of my big problems too. I like to have sex with a woman when I was getting high. It's like an euphoria. But these drugs, what it does, it mind alters you, and you just get stuck in that drug, and you don't want to do nothing but get high. So every little time you're trying to get your life in order, because there's a lot of programs out here that help us, but you don't really care about those things, because you care about is getting high to take away the pain and suffering that you've been through from your past. And instead of trying to make things better in your life, you're steady focused on why me, why this happened, why was I in prison, why my mom committed suicide, why, you know, that's another thing, my mom committed suicide. So when I'm a mama's boy, that just kind of crushed my whole life. And to this day, I don't understand it. And see, now me being in my recovery, I cry all the time, you know, which I didn't cry at my mom's funeral, because I feel good about me. And they say, you know, men don't cry. Well, that's a bunch of crap. I cry all the time, and I'm a grown-ass man, but I cry. And but anyway, life is good. But the main thing about these homeless people, and me being one, you've got to make changes in your life, or you're just going to continue to be in that homeless person. There's a lot of opportunities out here in Atlanta. There's a lot of good people. There's a lot of people that will help you, but you got to help yourself. That's the biggest thing.
Gary, when it comes to living a healthy, safe, stable, and happy life, how would you describe the hopes and dreams of people who are homeless in Atlanta?
I know a lot of them are really, really want to do better. They really do. And my hope is something's got to happen either crucial in your life, like breaking your leg like it did for me, or you just got to get your head knocked off or end up going to Grady and getting hit by a car. I mean, I hate saying stuff like that. It's something or you just make that decision. You're sick and tired of being tired, sick of being tired of being in the streets, because it's just a dead end street. You're either going to get killed, are you going to kill yourself, or you're just going to end up dying out in the streets, or you can make changes in your life. And that's the hardest part for homeless people. They don't want to make changes. They don't want to make that extra mile. They want to get high to take away the pain. That's like their medicine to help them cope with where they're at. And instead of trying to better themselves, these drugs and alcohol alters their brain. It alters your mind, because that's all you care about is getting high. And that's your drug to live in that environment that you're living in. You're living down with the dope boys. You're down with these people that'll steal from you. You got killers out there with you, but you don't care because you're in the same environment. You're stuck in that environment because you're not trying to better yourself. You don't really care about bettering yourself. All you care about is getting high, getting drunk. And I know for a fact, 95% of the people that are homeless, they're either mental health, they're on drugs, or alcohol, or all the above. So those three things I know. I take mental health medication now. And I used to self-medicate myself in the streets with drugs and alcohol. Now I take medication to help me deal with things better. I self-medicated myself for a long time. And some people, if you got mental health, you need to seek help from a doctor, and they can help you. But if you're sitting out there thinking these drugs, whether it's crack or whatever kind of meth or whatever it is you do, you're just going to kill yourself. You're slowly killing yourself. And you're going to end up in prison, or you're going to end up dead.
Gary, in the homeless community in Atlanta, what are some of the strengths that people can draw on as they strive to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives?
Say it one more time.
In the homeless community in Atlanta, what are some of the strengths that people have that they can draw on as they strive to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives?
I get it. I met this is another thing that'll blow your mind. I've met a lot of really good, strong people that are homeless. And this one guy, he's like my best friend, his name's Centric. And I'd see him all the time. He's always talking about the Lord. And I was like, man, I ain't trying to hear that. I'm trying to get high, man. I ain't trying to hear none of that, you know. But he's always talking about how God loves me. You got some people out there that are like angels for the Lord that are helping, trying to help people that are there. And they don't do drugs or anything. They're just out there. And you're looking at them, why are you out here? You don't even get high. You don't, you don't drink, but there are people out there that are actually trying to help others and help themselves at the same time. It's rare, but like I told you, percentage, I'd say 95% of the people that are out in the streets is because they choose to be. And they, like I say, they're on drugs or alcohol. I mean, I know because I was out there in those streets, and that was the biggest issue, the drugs. And they're so content with getting high. That's all. Every little bit of money they do get or they accumulate, they blow it on drugs. You know, that's what it is.
Gary, what challenges and obstacles make it harder for people in the homeless community in Atlanta to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives? What holds people back?
I think what holds them back is that they're scared. They're scared to make a change. They don't want to make a change because they're so content with the way they're living. The drugs has got their minds so altered that they're not really focused on trying to do any better. They're not trying to make any waves. They're not trying to make any changes because they're so content with getting high. They're so content with their drinking or whatever choice of drug that they do. They use those tools right there just to communicate, to live the life they're living, because they don't have no communication with other people because it's a different lifestyle. They're so stuck in that life right there. And a lot of these people don't have family. So the people in the streets becomes their family, whether it's a drug relationship or a girl relationship with drugs. It's all about the drugs and alcohol. So they come together some of them kind of deal with each other different ways. But it's like a family thing, too. But your main job is getting high and drinking. And that's what they do. And that's how they live, because I was one of those people.
What needs to be done so that the challenges and obstacles you just mentioned can be overcome?
It's hard to say because Atlanta's infested with drugs, as we know. That's a given. It's infested, but you get alcohol in every corner, and it's legal. So that's the part that I can't explain. It's hard for me to say anything about that because I know what it's like being an alcoholic, and I know what it's like to be strung out on drugs. I know what it's like to not have anything. I know what it's like to be homeless. That's a hard question for me to answer because it's really just so difficult because there's so many people out there, and the thing is, there's some good people out there that are just stuck on that. Their mind's so altered, they don't even care about life anymore. All they care about is getting high or drinking, because I was one of those guys. And it's by the grace of God, I made changes. And it's a battle for me every day, because when I don't get things that don't happen my way, or I get bad news, or I get all these adversities, I feel like just going to have a damn drink and saying, F this program, F everything. But then there's something on the other side that says, no, you've came too far. So it's a battle. And it's a battle for them because they're so content with living, not taking a shower and not having nice shoes and wearing the same clothes and, you know, doing that life. That drug has just got them stuck. And the biggest drug out there is that cocaine, that crack. And you were an alcoholic like me. See, alcohol is a drug too. People don't realize alcohol is one of the worst drugs out here because you can buy it on every corner, and it's cheap, you know, compared to drugs. But that crack makes people do things they would never do in a million years. They steal, they rob, they kill, they take, they do sexual favors, they do whatever they got to do to get that drug, and that just destroys their whole persona. They don't care about what it takes to get it. They don't care who they hurt. They don't care how it affects others. They don't care if they have any families. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of these people that are out there don't have any family. They don't. They don't have a – they've been damaged when they – you know. So a lot of people have family support. I do. I just found mine after 24 years. I didn't want to be around my family when I was in the streets because I don't want them to know where I was. I was embarrassed. You know, I don't want y'all to know I'm in 8 months recovery. I tell everybody I'm in my recovery. Matter of fact, they say, Gary, why are you always? Because that's what I do. I talk about my recovery. If you don't like it, don't listen to it. I'm talking about me. So, yeah, I'm still in my recovery, and I'm going to keep talking about it. If you don't want to hear it, see you later. Because I don't want to ever go back to that life I lived. I don't. I got too much going on. You know what I mean? But yeah.
Gary, you've talked about the obstacle of drug use, and you've spoken especially about the crack problem in Atlanta.
Yes, it's bad. It's infested. I mean, I'll be honest with you, that's probably about 99% of the people homeless, they're on that crack. Because it's so available. It's on every corner. And see, if you're an alcoholic, see, the alcohol, once I drink the alcohol, that's what leads me off to do the crack and the other stuff, anything, because the alcohol is that's my main problem. But when I drink, it makes me want to just do everything else that comes my way. And I got really stuck on that crack for years, and it destroyed everything around me. The crack and alcohol, but that what I've seen with my eyes, the main drug out there that's destroying people and just taking people's lives left and right is that crack.
How to solve that problem?
How do you solve it? I don't know how you can solve it, but I know until you make a decision, until you get tired of getting locked up, and for me, I kept going back to prison. Because after a while, you know, jail, they get tired of you, jail, they throw you down the road. That's what happens. You keep doing the same thing over and over and over. Yeah, you do a little jail time. You might get out quick and this and that. Then it becomes a problem. You got the same chart. I used to shoplift, so every time I go in front of that judge, Mr. You got like 6 shoplifting charges. I told you last time, well, you're going down the road this time. So you keep doing that repetitive stuff over and over and over and over. You're going to end up dead, or you end up in the chain gang. And that's what happens. And some people, when they go down the road, they change. Some people don't. And when you're down the road, oh, I found the Lord, I'm doing great, yeah. But as soon as they get out, they put that Bible in the back seat. They put God in the back seat. He gave you all your prayers you answered for. You got your family back, got a good job. And then you start driving, doing things your way, and that's when you fall back into that same old routine that you did the time before that and the time before that. It becomes a repetitive cycle. Until you defeat that cycle and make changes in your life, and it's not easy. Even when you make those changes, being sober is more the most difficult thing I've ever had to do in my life. Because anybody can be a fuck up. Anybody can do wrong. Doing the right thing is not easy, especially when you come from an environment that I lived for a long time. I didn't care. I didn't have no responsibility. What's my responsibility? Getting high. My responsibility is getting drunk today. And trying to go get have sex with some chick that I don't even know, you know. So don't know what she got, don't care, because that alcohol just overrides all that. I ain't worried about AIDS. I ain't worried about gonorrhea, syphilis, and all that. I'm drinking that. But it's hard to say. I know a lot of it's sad to see people. I was one of them. But the drugs and alcohol is 95% of people out are homeless is because of drugs. And it's because they're past or they're just not trying to move forward. They're not trying to do anything. They don't care. Because they know in Atlanta, they're going to feed you. You ain't going to worry about it. They got church people riding around as we speak. You got people riding around in trucks, giving out clothes, food, every day. And there's places that they feed you. So one thing about Atlanta I do like, they feed you very well. And the people that aren't, they use that as a tool to get money so they can buy drugs. Oh, I'm trying to get some to eat. That is a tool that 95% of these homeless people do because they say, look, and some people, if you're really hungry, they'll take you to the store right now and buy you all the groceries you want. They won't give you a dime in your pocket. Oh, you're hungry? Sure, let's go to the store right here. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm not giving you no money. You buy anything you want. Whatever. But I need money. Yeah, I know that's right. It's a game, you know, and So I know that. So, and me, myself, if somebody's hungry, I will go take you in the store. Because me being an alcoholic and an addict, because of me being white, a lot of guys, you know, they don't see my tattoos. They think, oh, this guy, he's a free pick. I'm going to ask him for some money. I'm homeless. I look here, bro. First of all, I'm cool with that. I'm not going to give you any money. If you want something to eat, I got an EB charge. You can get any. Let's go right now. But I need, bro, I used to do drugs. I used to drink. I'm homeless too. I'm just not got my place yet, so I'm not your guy. But I will feed somebody. There is a difference.
Gary, imagine that you are a powerful leader. Imagine you're a decision maker who can really make things happen. How would you change the system to help people in the homeless community in Atlanta to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives. Imagine you're a powerful leader. How would you change the system?
I would have it to where we had more places, like missions, not like Salvation Army, that would actually people, there would be like a code to get in, and there'd be rules and regulations, and like drug tests, like if you want to come in this place here, we'll feed you, we'll help you get a job, help you get your birth certificate, you got a place to stay, but when you come in, breathalyze them. Because if you're on drugs, you're not really, you're just using our place as a tool just to lay your head down and get what you can out of it. But if you want to come to this place right here, it's a program, it's a Christian foundation type thing, whatever, but you have to follow these rules. If you want to make some changes and you got people, caseworkers in there, well, hey, this guy, Gary, he's changing. Let's put him on this level here. He's done made it the 90 days. Now we can put them in an apartment, maybe. Start helping people like that. There needs to be more places that people can come to. And then there's got to be rules and regulations, because they can pull the bluff on your eye. Well, this guy's still out smoking crack. He's still drinking, but he comes to this place, and we're about to give him an apartment. It's kind of the program I'm in, because it seems like the people that are getting high, they get their places quicker. You know, so they need to have regulations and places for people that, like me, myself, that are trying so hard to do right. But it's not fair. But you give this guy an apartment, he's smoking crack, he's stealing at the stores, he's doing all these things, but he's not doing anything right, but he's getting an apartment. So I think there should be rules and regulations. So that's the thing too, a lot of people that are the homeless, they don't do rules and regulations. They don't give a shit about that. They really don't. They don't give a damn about what you think. They ain't washed your ass in a year. They won't tell you whatever they want to tell you just to get what they want. So that's the hard part. So that's a hard, really, that's what I would do. But if I could like help people, say, look here, man, you want to come to this place right here, I promise you it'll help you. But if you're going to play with us, stay out where you're at, because we're going to try to help you, but you got to help yourself. I mean, there's got to be structure. And a lot of people don't want to do structure. They don't want to do responsibility. A lot of homeless people, all they care about is getting high and drinking. So they're not really trying to do any structure. Their structure is to get high. So that's the key to that. But people don't want to change. I didn't want to change. So, you know, I've been an fuck up for 30-something years. So, I mean, you know, when my mom committed suicide, my whole life, because I was a mama's boy, only child. It crushed me. So my way was dealing with that was just getting high and drinking. I said, you know what? I don't have to deal with anything now. I'm good. And it just totally destroyed my life, my whole life. Drugs and alcohol. That's what it was based on. That was my life. That's how I rolled. And I guarantee you, over 95% of those people that are homeless, they're on drugs or they got mental health issues or all the above. A lot of stuff going on. And you can't help them. Some of these people cannot be helped. That's facts. They're not trying to, you know, if a person's out there, like you came to me on the street and you said, look here, Mr. We're going to put you up in this place right here. Within 6 months, you'll get a house or an apartment. We'll help you get a car. We'll help you get this and get you a life in order. They don't want that. They want to stay high. To me, I don't understand that.
I have one last question for you, please, Gary.
Okay.
Imagine you had $1 million. And you could spend it to help people in the homeless community in Atlanta to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives. How exactly would you spend that $1 million to help homeless people in Atlanta?
What I would do, I'd have a place set up like this. I'd buy a big warehouse, and I'd have it to where you could come in and have somebody like me and other people that have actually been homeless and reach out to these people and show them that it can be done and help them get their lives in order and preach the word. You know, I don't know. If you put God first in your life, things will happen. Good things. I don't know. A lot of people don't believe in God. Some people don't believe in Jesus. There's so many different religions, but I know God is real. And until you realize God is first, have a foundation place where a person can come and have people like me that's been 5 years recovery, or like Mike Nolan, 25 years, 26 year recovery, give that man a hug. Here's you something to eat. Y'all want to spend the night, take a shower, a place they come and lay down for the moment off the street and learn something, and then show them, look, if you want to come back, we can put you in this program here, and show them what's available in their face to where they will. You got to do this first, and once you do this, you go to this level, and show them what they can do. And you have a people like me and other people that are 5, 10 years sobriety and say, hey, man, I've been to prison. I've been where you've been. I've been in them streets for 20 years, brother. And reach out to these people and have a big warehouse just full of food, and they can take a shower, they can lay down, they can spend a night, get off the street for a day or two, and then show them these different programs that can help them get to where they can get an apartment or go to a drug type thing, recovery thing, because people need help. They don't know what to do. And if you got somebody like this actually been in the streets like me, I think we're more capable, because you got these people that got all this knowledge. They took all these psychology classes, got a doctorate on recovery. But how the hell do you know shit about it? You've never smoked crack. You've never drank. But you're trying to tell me what I need to know about drugs. How do you know what I need to do? Because you have no idea, because you haven't ever been strung out. But you got all these degrees and plaques on the wall. You need somebody like us that have been in recovery to help them. That's what I believe. Yeah. Strongly.
Gary, I really appreciate you taking time to talk. The last word is yours. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
I'm just thankful. And, until you realize God is real and put him first, your life is meaningless. That's just how I roll. That's it.